message would you have me pass to the regime?
Just this, Rhys replied. He leveled the AK at General Jafar al-Sadiq's face and depressed the trigger. The 7.62x39 bullet entered just to the left of the right eye. The round caved in the right side of the general's head, a mass of brain tissue hitting the wall behind him and sliding to the floor of the musalla, showering the area in a dark red mist. He collapsed on his right side, blood seeping into the prayer rug. The man who had collaborated with Al-Qaeda and provided them materials, support, and sanction, and who had ultimately approved the plan for September 11, 2001, and the bioweapon attacks on its 20th anniversary, was killed by an American on Holy Land. Rhys stepped forward and followed up with two more rounds to the head to ensure his target was dead. He then slung the Kalashnikov and removed a chain from around his neck. He held the ring between his fingertips, remembering Lauren and Lucy, and wondering what would have happened had Jen survived that Tuesday morning in September. Would two American cities now be smoldering piles of rubble? Did her death inadvertently save 500,000 lives? Rhys knelt, opened Jafar's left hand, and placed the ring inside. He pressed the dead man's fingers around it in a fist.
"They'll get the message," Rhys whispered.
The messenger then made his way back through the house just the way he'd practiced in his team's rehearsals all those years ago, when al-Zarqawi was planning the Iraq insurgency from this very compound. He worked his way through the shadows past the bodies of Jafar's four bodyguards. He climbed the back wall and dropped into a dark alley, sinking into the shadows as he listened for any sounds that betrayed his presence. He stood, folded the stock under the AK, and placed it in his satchel. He then adjusted his shima and walked toward his extract. He hit the beach and made his way to the water's edge, feeling the sand give way beneath his feet, just as it had in Coronado all those years ago. He could see the fishing trawler loitering 500 yards off the coast, trolling for sturgeon in the early morning darkness. He knelt behind a cluster of rocks protruding from the sand and scanned the slope that led to the street above. Nothing signified that a foreigner had invaded or that one of the most formidable terrorists in the world had just met his maker. He had sent the message. It was time to go. Rhys took one last look, then turning, moved through the light shore break, out beyond the waves toward the beckoning sea. Epilogue. I have a message from God unto thee. Ehud the Assassin, Judges, chapter 3, verse 20, King James Version. Ulcinj, Montenegro. The envelope arrived via courier early that morning. Nizar Khatan tipped the boy a 5-euro note and rolled the letter over in his hands. It had traveled a long way. Although originally developed to transfer money, in the modern world the ancient system of hawala persisted as the most secure way to pass information. With the CIA and Mossad collecting electronic communications from almost every keystroke worldwide, sifting it through complex algorithms developed by the tech titans in the private sector, it was becoming increasingly difficult to remain anonymous in a data-driven economy. It amused Nizar that those technology-dependent intelligence organizations could be fooled by a handheld package trading hands and crossing borders with impunity. All one needed was time and patience. Nizar had been given multiple assignments in this fashion. All were profitable when coming from Masada. The Russian mafia had initially offered him refuge, but only because of an arrangement with a banished colonel. A colonel who had been turned into mulch when a PG-32V-105mm anti-armor heat round destroyed his armored Mercedes in Switzerland. Intelligence agencies and the media had pointed the finger at a terrorist known as Mohammed Farouk. Nizar wondered if he had really pressed the button that had killed the Russian colonel. It seemed too convenient. What the West liked to call the free press was not to be trusted. After the Odessa operation, Nizar had seen the writing on the wall. He was expendable. True, he'd always been expendable, but without Russian blood in his veins, it was only a matter of time before the Bratva separated his head from his body. He had always scoffed at those who had sacrificed themselves for Allah. Die? For the Prophet? For the cause? Nizar preferred to live for himself, not for a prophet or ideology. He'd seen too many young, idealistic warriors strap on suicide vests and martyr themselves for a religion they didn't even fully comprehend. That was not Nizar's way. He favored freelance work that benefited his multiple bank accounts. He'd done a job for the Bratva in Montenegro and never returned to the Russia that had become his base of operations after he sent a bullet at Russian President Zubarov. His partner's bullet had found its mark, eviscerating their target in front of the world. Nizar had adjusted and put his second shot into a man on a rooftop, a man who should have killed President Grimes. Nizar had read the papers. His round had not connected with his intended target. It had killed an American spy. It did not take much digging to associate that death with a funeral in South Carolina of a former Navy SEAL named Frederick Strain. The sniper wondered what Strain was doing on the rooftop in exactly the position of Nizar's mark. He should not have been there. Nizar had been hired to kill a member of President Zubarov's FSO security detail, a man with nationalist leanings and ties to Ukraine. Instead, his bullet had killed the American. General Yadid had passed him the details when he'd given him the order that had elevated Nizar to prominence as one of the top guns for hire in the business. He had felt nothing when he pressed the trigger on the suppressed Stechkin and sent the 9x18 round through the head of his partner, the legendary sniper known as Tasho al-Shishani. The student had become the master. Now he worked alone and solved problems. That skill set put him on the radar of a company called Masada. The Masada CEO had told him he was free to work for anyone as long as they weren't other Americans. Masada wanted sole American rights, a demand to which Nizar readily acquiesced. Masada paid well. Eric Sawyer had brokered an introduction to Montenegro's president, a man who had previously served as prime minister, a politician who maintained power through connections with the Montenegrin mafia. He had recently been bestowed with the rather dubious honor of Person of the Year in Organized Crime by the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, an organization dedicated to ferreting out corruption through political links to the underworld. That's how things were done in Montenegro. Nizar was protected by the Montenegrin mafia through the president. He maintained two homes, a flat in the coastal city of Ulcinj and a mountain cottage in Zabljak. He preferred the Mediterranean climate and beaches of the ancient settlement on the Adriatic to the mountains of the northern region, but in his line of work it was wise to have options. With the influx of tourists in both areas, he was able to blend in. He was also learning English from the prostitutes run by the mafia in the port town. He'd grown up at war and knew women served a purpose. The Ukrainian girl still slept. He enjoyed what she did to him in bed, and with her help, his English was improving. He knew she liked it when he was in town because he paid for her services and the mafia did not pimp her out to businessmen or criminals from abroad, many of whom used the powerless as heirs to their violent frustrations. The arrangement worked well for them both. Nizar did not use a cell phone or own a computer. He had operated without them for long enough to know that their convenience had a distinct and obvious downside. Early on, he noted a commonality between those the West took out with their drones and hit teams. They all used cell phones. Sometimes they even found those without the mobile devices. Bin Laden had found that out the hard way. Montenegro offered access to Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. But as soon as Nizar felt the tides shifting, he would be on his way to his next temporary home. Thailand, Panama, Argentina. There were options for a man with no ties. All one needed was capital. Nizar had grown to like the ancient seaport, a settlement that had once been the pirate capital of the Adriatic. The mafia ensured it remained connected to its roots. He varied his routine between the flat on the coast and the cottage in the mountains. He traveled enough to keep anyone tracking his movements from being able to discern distinct patterns, though Nizar knew that no matter how many precautions he took, there would always be patterns. A skilled hunter just needed to be able to study him long enough to discern them. He bought and read newspapers at various shops in the city. There was one cafe by the water that he particularly enjoyed. When he needed to do further research, he would visit one of the internet cafes that still existed in Montenegro, plug in an external hard drive, and run his search through the installed search engine to minimize his trail. The Montenegrin government had provided him with passports and identities along with accompanying credit cards. He would miss the Balkans, but that was how one survived. You had to keep moving. There were other Ukrainian girls, no matter where he ended up. They were quite popular in the human trafficking trade. He had read that Eric Sawyer had passed away at an island home in the West Indies. Details were sparse, which was suspicious. Sawyer's death was disappointing. The Masada founder had sent him quite a few lucrative contracts over the past 2 years. Sawyer's death was also a sign. It was time for Nizar to leave Montenegro behind. He pulled a book from the shelf, a book he couldn't even read, The Great Game. It was written in English, a language he could not yet understand, though he was working on it. The book had been given to him 2 years earlier when he met with Sawyer in Africa. The American needed him to do a job, to eliminate a problem in Nigeria. Sawyer had also taught him a code. A note would arrive by courier. Inside were a series of numbers. An intelligence service could attempt to decipher it until the end of time. Its genius was its simplicity. Page number, line number, letter number. Even if someone knew how it worked, without the exact edition of the correct book, breaking it was impossible. Nizar flipped to page 176, ran his finger down to the eighth line, and then moved it across to the 12th letter, J. It took him a while, but by the end he had a page full of letters. Nizar had no idea what it said. There were no spaces between them, just a series of letters that only someone who could read and write English could break down into sentences. He returned to the small bedroom and nudged the naked blonde woman awake. "Translate," he said in Russian. A destination country for human trafficking, Montenegro was a waypoint for organized crime syndicates that routinely moved young girls and women from Ukraine, Serbia, and Bulgaria to Europe and the United States and into forced prostitution. Despite international pressure, the Balkan nation remained a hotbed for the growing industry. The young woman slipped from beneath the sheets and moved to the small desk in the main room. It was early and she needed her fix. At least he didn't beat her or put cigarettes out on her skin, nor did he cut or choke her or invite other men to join. Though she was never permitted to leave the flat, he treated her well. She cooked, cleaned, spread her legs, and taught him English. She sat naked at the bureau with the sun beginning to break through the thin curtains. It was going to be a beautiful day. After she was done, she'd make them breakfast. She liked the view from the kitchen, out over the city with a slice of the Adriatic Sea in the distance. Nizar started a kettle of water to make tea, keeping his eye on the lithe young figure at his desk. She circled the words, breaking the unending letters into coherent sentences. She then translated the English into Russian on a separate sheet of paper. By the time her tea was ready, she had finished her work. She handed the document to Nizar. The assassin held it up to the light and read. It was a contract. It was structured in a similar fashion to Nizar's other work for Sawyer. It informed the assassin that 2 million euros had been laundered through a yacht brokerage service in the British Virgin Islands to a construction company in Montenegro in the form of a fictitious invoice that would be paid to Nizar for consultation on an ongoing commercial development project. The money had already been deposited in the usual account. Unusual to this contract was that Nizar was free to leave it unfulfilled. With Sawyer being dead, that was certainly an incentive. The contract went on to state that another 6 million euros would be transferred upon completion of the job. Nizar thought of the cost associated with moving his operation from Montenegro to a place like Argentina if the current president was deposed, arrested, or killed, all of which were distinct possibilities. There was another sentence that stood out. The mark is actively targeting you. It would be best if you found him before he finds you. Additional incentive? That was just like Sawyer. Was it true? Nizar read on. By the time he finished the document, he was certain of its veracity. He had connected the events in Odessa to the death of the SEAL to the news reports of a man who was now in the employ of the United States Intelligence Services, a man who had proven very hard to kill. He lit a match and held the papers to the flame. They caught easily, the fire creeping up the parchments until it threatened to burn the assassin's fingers. Moving to the kitchen, he dropped what was left into the sink and turned on the water. The faucet sputtered until it seemed to catch a second wind that was powerful enough to carry the charred remains of the contract into the pipes of the ancient city. The girl remained sitting at the small desk, sipping her hot tea. She'd learned early on to speak only if spoken to and to simply do exactly as she was instructed. She was a survivor. Nizar approached her from behind and stroked her hair. It felt good. She closed her eyes and smiled. Perhaps he would stay for longer this time and she wouldn't have to go back to the house with the other girls. That would be nice. Maybe if she proved worthy, he'd buy her outright? She would be sure to continue giving him nights to remember. His hand brushed softly down the left side of her head, past her cheek, and to the back of her neck. Maybe there truly was hope. The terror lasted only a second. Her eyes opened wide as he yanked her hair back, exposing the soft skin of her neck. He inserted the thin blade behind the windpipe, its sharp edge slicing completely through to the other side. Locking her body against the chair, he sawed outward, the way the Russian advisors had taught him in the Syria of his youth. She struggled only briefly, scratching at the hand that was taking her life, the blood rushing from her severed carotid artery draining down her breasts and spraying onto the desk in front of her in cadence with the beating of her heart. Nizar controlled her head as the pumping weakened. When her heart lost the strength to circulate blood through a failing system, the pressure subsided, and her hands fell to her sides. He looked once more into her dead eyes before letting her head drop to the desk. He'd have the Montenegrin mafia clean it up. True, he would have to pay for her, but Sawyer's money would take care of that. There were always plenty of girls. With the founder of Masada dead, she was the only other person privy to the contract and the translated note. Only in death could she be trusted to keep the secret. No one would miss or mourn her. No loose ends. That was how Nizar stayed alive. He walked to the sink and washed the blood from his hands. He then cleaned the blade, wiped it dry with a towel, and returned it to a drawer. The sun had broken the horizon, an emerging dawn with a new contract for Nizar, his most profitable to date. It was time to study his prey. If what Sawyer had written was accurate, the man was already hunting him. To Nizar, killing Frederick Strain was business. He did not wish death to the infidels like the true believers who sacrificed themselves for the cause. To his new mark, Strain's death had been personal. Nizar would use that to his advantage. His target's emotion was something he could exploit. Nizar was a sniper, a hunter of men, an assassin. He dropped the small thumb drive in his pocket and grabbed his coat. He closed and locked the apartment door behind him and smiled at an old woman who was already awake and sweeping the hall the way she did every morning. He descended the steps to the path that led to a winding road. It was time to buy a newspaper and a tea. It was time to think. He had a problem to solve, a problem to eliminate. As he walked the narrow stone streets of the port city, the final line of the contract echoed in the recesses